House, please come to order.
Okay, that's all right.
Members, please indicate their presence by voting. Would the clerk please take the roll?
26 members present.
Today's chaplain is Captain David Scholin from the Salvation Army. Would you please rise for the invocation?
Pray. Eternal God, this day we pray for your continued blessing over the members of this legislative body. We pray for strength to face the challenges, determination to accomplish that which is best, and skill to construct laws and ordinances for the betterment of life for our citizens of this great state. This day we just pray that you'll add your special blessing upon the Cotton family. In your precious name, amen.
Copeland, will you lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the prayer be spread on the journal.
Is your objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Mr. Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to go down to announcements, if we could.
Without objection, under announcement.
I'd just like to announce for the body, and everyone probably already knows it, but Sam and Martha Cotton have a new baby boy.
Yeah. Mr. Speaker?
Mr. Taylor?
Yes. knowing how important the strong sentiment is within this body for parental leave to accomplish the proper bonding of a child, I would move at this time that the speaker be excused for the remainder of the session.
You may get more votes than you expect, huh? Thank you for the warm reception this morning. We're all happy and healthy. She's ready to come home. Martha wants to name the baby Gus, and I don't think I'm going to be able to deny her, so I'm sure I'll get used to it. We're still in second reading on it, though. Would the clerk certify as the correctness of the journal for the previous day?
Yes, there is a correction to the journal for the 73rd day on page 2877. Representative Ellis made the adjournment motion, not Representative Navarre. With this correction, I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 73rd day.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the journal for the 73rd day is correct to be approved as certified.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Oh, there is an objection.
Yeah, just a point of inquiry. Was the clerk able to correct the voting processes that occurred yesterday?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
I withdraw.
Further objection? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Are there guests to be introduced this morning? Mr. Gall?
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. It's kind of a pleasure for me today. I haven't had an opportunity to introduce members of my staff before, but two of them are having birthdays, and I'd kind of like to wish congratulations and introduce Sheila Enger, whose birthday is tomorrow, and next to her, you can stand under recognized, Barbara Pritchett, whose birthday was day before yesterday. They work for me and for the House Judiciary Committee. Thank you very much. That was on request.
Mr. Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's my pleasure to introduce a good friend in Gallery A, who's actually from downtown Fairbanks, Randy Swenson. He's the president of the Alaska Association of Elementary School Principals. Randy Swenson.
Mr. Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Also in Gallery A, a friend and constituent of Representative Swackhammer and myself, Survey Wilson, who is a principal at Chapman Elementary School in Anchor Point, Alaska.
Representative Hanley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Perhaps Representative Phillips was going to do the same thing, but in that same Gallery A, I would like to introduce Arch Jeffrey, the principal of Ravenwood Elementary School.
And Mr. Jeffrey is the president-elect of the Alaska Association of Elementary Principals. Welcome. Mr. Lehman?
Mr. Speaker, we have a special guest page today. I introduced her earlier in the week, but she wasn't a guest page then. But it's my niece, Beth Paulson, who is a junior in Ashby High School in Minnesota. And she and her mother came up earlier, about a week ago, to spend some time with us. And we're just pleased to have her here. And she's here in the back, and she'll be helping us today. And I just wish the body would welcome her.
Mr. Furness?
Mr. Speaker, I just noticed another gentleman who just... gentleman who just walked into Gallery A, who is an Alaska businessman who's active in post-secondary education, Mr. Milton Berg.
We have messages from the governor.
Dear Representative Cotton, on this date I have signed the following bill and I'm transmitting the engrossed and enrolled copies to the Lieutenant Governor's Office for permanent filing. Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 396, Finance, reappropriating certain appropriations made in 1989 for oil spill-related costs, making supplemental appropriations for oil and gas litigation for costs associated with the Exxon Valdez oil spill and for other purposes, and making a special appropriation for a grant to the Arctic Winter Games Corporation of Alaska and providing for an effective date. Chapter number 17, SLA 1990. Signed sincerely, Steve Cooper, Governor. I have no further messages from the Governor, Mr. Speaker.
Messages from the other House?
The Senate has approved the following citations and they are transmitted for consideration. Honoring Edna March and honoring Kenai Peninsula basketball players and coaches. The Senate has passed the following and they are transmitted for consideration. Committee substitute for sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 19 rules amended by the Rules Committee. An act relating to seizure and forfeiture of property in cases involving alcoholic beverages, controlled substances, and imitation controlled substances.
Health, Education, Social Services, Judiciary, and Finance.
Committee substitute for Senate Bill 205, Resources by the Resources Committee. An act relating to the rental fee charged for shore fisheries leases and providing for an effective date.
Resources and Finance.
Senate Bill 506 by the Labor and Commerce Committee. An act exempting certain employment of line haul truck drivers from overtime wage requirements.
Transportation and Labor and Commerce Committees.
I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
Are there other communications?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of standing committees?
The Judiciary Committee has considered House Bill 19, Foster Care Review Boards, recommends it be replaced with a Judiciary Committee substitute with a new title and due pass and attaches a fiscal note. Report was signed by the co-chairs Gall and Grunberg. Concurring Grunberg, Ellis, Miller, Davidson, Gall, and M. Davis. Martin has no recommendation. House Bill 19 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Judiciary Committee has considered House Bill 300, Public Utility Regulation, recommends it be replaced with the Judiciary Committee substitute with a new title and due pass. Report was signed by the co-chairs Grunberg and Gall. Concurring Martin, Grunberg, Miller, and Ellis. Having no recommendation, Gall and M. Davis. House Bill 300 has no further referral. The Labor and Commerce Committee has considered House Bill 401, Workplace Safety, recommends it be replaced with the Labor and Commerce Committee substitute with a new title and due pass and attaches a zero note with analysis. The report was signed by Donnelly Chairman, concurring Donnelly, Boyer, and Finkelstein. Collins has no recommendation. House Bill 401 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Hess Committee has considered House Bill 571, Notice to Child Support Obligors, and recommends it be replaced with a Hess Committee substitute with the same title, recommends an additional referral to the Finance Committee, and attaches a fiscal note. Report was signed by Ellis Chairman. Signing due pass, Ellis, Grunberg, Furness, C. Davis, and Boyer. House Bill 571 has no further referral. The Resources Committee has considered House Bill 578, Advisory Council Transportation Oil Hazard Substances, recommends it be replaced with the Resources Committee substitute with a new title and due pass and attaches a fiscal note. Report was signed by Davidson, co-chair. Concurring, Davidson, Menard, Navarre, Jacko, and M. Davis. Having no recommendation, Hudson. Furness signed to amend. House Bill 578 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Other reports to special committees?
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction, citations, resolutions?
Citation honoring the Green and Colts Wrestling Team, 1990 District Champions by Representative Cotton and Senator Kelly. Citation honoring the Providence House of Providence Hospital by Representative Kubina. Citation honoring Edgar Nallner, Sr. by Representative Wallace. Citation honoring Lillian Olin, bilingual teacher, by Representative Wallace. Citation honoring Timothy Miller by Representatives Furness, Barnes, and Collins. Citation honoring Donald Chickerell, National Elementary Principal Award for Outstanding Leadership in Science Education by Representatives Menard, Larson, Senator Krutula, and Szymanski. House Concurrent Resolution Number 60 by the State Affairs Committee, creating the Information Systems Special Committee.
State Affairs and Finance.
I have no further resolutions for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Are there bills to introduce?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Clerk, please read the first item on today's calendar.
House Joint Resolution Number 27 by Zawacki, Hanley, Lehman, Hudson, Collins, Boucher, Sharp, Swackhammer, Miller, Martin, Taylor, Furness, Rieger, and Foster, relating to compensation for lost revenue and income caused by high seas interception of Alaskan salmon. The House Special Committee on Foreign Trade has considered the resolution and reports it back as follows with a zero note with analysis, citing DuPass, Jacko, Collins, Hudson, and Ellis. M. Davis has no recommendation. The Resources Committee has considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with the Resources Committee substitute with the same title and DuPass. Concurring, Davidson, Hudson, Sharp, Navarre, and Jacko. M. Davis has no recommendation. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Moving to ask unanimous consent that the Resources Committee substitute for House Joint Resolution 27 be considered in lieu of the original bill.
Is there objection? Hearing no objection, the Resources Committee substitute has been adopted. Does the clerk have amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm not used to this job anymore. I move and ask unanimous consent that the committee substitute for House Joint Resolution 27 resources be considered engrossed in advance third reading and placed on final task.
Is there objection to the advancement motion? Is there objection? Hearing no objection. The resolution has been advanced from second to third reading. Clerk, please read the resolution for the third time.
Committee substitute for House Joint Resolution 27 resources by the Resources Committee relating to compensation for lost revenue and income caused by high seas interceptions of Alaskan salmon.
Mr. Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I certainly support this bill, and I do intend to vote for it. The bill, however, contains one provision that I'd like to bring to the body's attention, and that is the further resolve on page 3, line 15. And this requires that the fund, specifically the fund to reimburse Alaska fishermen and the state, be financed by a tariff on overseas fisheries products. I can't think of any other bill, at least since I've been in this body, that has dealt with the complex issues of tariffs. And I know, and I've spoken with the representative from District 8 about this morning, that this is a very complex issue, that I am certainly not particularly qualified to speak on. But one thing I think we should never lose sight of, regardless of whether it's a tariff designed to protect our own people or not, that tariffs add to the cost of goods and services, and particularly goods, and from a consumer's point of view, this may increase the cost of product. And I don't know if that's an issue of tariffs that's often discussed, but from a consumer's point of view, it may have an additional price built in to the goods themselves, and I just think we should keep that in mind.
Mr. Zawacki, the prime sponsor.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, thank you. I might just touch on the comments that were just made by the previous speaker. In the information that was received from all of our congressional leaders, and one of them happens to be in the packet that I put on your desk, it's interesting that they say, yes, there might be the problem in regards to the trying to set it up through a tariff because of the possible violation of the general agreement on tariffs and trades with the foreign countries out there. But again, the congressional leader says there's nothing illegal, there is nothing wrong with the U.S. Congress or even the president trying to reestablish these tariffs with those people out there. I do appreciate that. Yes, there were some concerns on the bill. One of them was the possibility of a constitutional problem with the bill itself as to can we indeed request Congress or the president to demand recompensation or compensation to our fishermen, the Alaska Fishers Association, and to the state. As our congressional leader said, there is nothing in our U.S. Constitution that prevents any individual citizen or any government entity from requesting this from our U.S. Congress or from the president. Nowhere in the Constitution is there any restriction whatsoever. The resolution, again, is just one additional step to further protect and strengthen the fishing industry in the state of Alaska, protect the individual fishermen, the Fishers Association, and the entire state from southeast all the way up through the Northwest Territories out there. And all we're asking is the U.S. Congress and the president to look at the tariffs, to look at the agreements that we presently have with the existing nations, Japan and Korea. We do not have one at this time with Taiwan. And all we're trying to do is saying that Alaska is being hurt, and we need to have you step forward and do something, not only to help the state of Alaska, by the way, but also in your packet, in fact, I just received it a couple days ago, was a Senate concurrent resolution from Hawaii. They have as much or as large problem as we do in regards to high seas drift net seas problems also. And if you look at it, they're talking about 30,000 miles of net. And not only the 30,000 miles of net that is catching existing, but when the nets sink to the bottom of the ocean, and the fish and mammals that are caught that rot, this net comes right back up. It's the same situation that I'm sure is happening in Alaska's waters out there. So what we're trying to do is say to the Congress and U.S. President, continue to forcefully protect our fisheries. And if we have to be a little more forceful with those countries and their fishermen who are abusing our fish, then maybe we should do something. Going back to the one in the resolution in Hawaii, I might just put, they kind of were a little more blunt in it. They actually urged Congress and the President to suspend trade relations with any nation supporting or sanctioning the practice of drift net fishing. So I think it's a very good resolution, and I think we should continue to express our support for our fishermen in Alaska. Thank you.
Mr. Jacko?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I raise in support of this resolution, but I guess I heard this resolution last year in the Foreign Trade Committee, and I would have to, as the previous speaker just said, it does express our frustration with what's happened in the high seas. I guess my concerns with it and my reservations, what I would like to express to fishermen, I think there's that has exceptional intentions, but I think it's probably somewhat of a long shot, and my concern was that fishermen would have their hopes raised to think that they're actually going to receive compensation, which, of course, we all hope they do, but I would just like to caution fishermen that it's probably a long shot, but it's a well-intentioned resolution, so I do support it and ask members to support it also. Thank you.
Mr. Taylor?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. As one of the original founders of an organization out of Ketchikan called CCOPS, which helped to raise the level of public awareness about the high seas interception that has been going on for a long period of time, I'm particularly proud that this resolution has finally made it to the floor. This body has passed similar resolutions, not involving necessarily the compensation back to Alaska's fishermen, but certainly strong resolutions involving high seas intercept. In fact, 6 years ago, many of us were in the body at that time, participated with now Senator Binkley when he brought forward a resolution on high seas intercept just in the Bristol Bay area. It was one of the first ones I had an opportunity to vote on and see. I'm very proud of the fact that our congressional delegation has responded in the way that they have on this issue, and that by 1991 we're going to see some significant changes in the manner in which that intercepting fleet is brought to account, and our ability to identify and locate those vessels. I'm also very proud of the fact that you, Mr. Speaker, and another member from the other body also traveled to Washington, D.C. and met with the Russians and some other people on this very same issue. So I think it's something that has very strong bipartisan support, not only in this body but in the other, and that it's something that we need to move as quickly as we can. And furthermore, I also concur with the comments made by the representative to my left, the former speaker, in that it probably is a long shot. But maybe if Congress gets enough resolutions from the people in California who are not allowed to sell their oranges, from the people in Mississippi who are not allowed to sell their rice in some of these nations, that maybe we can begin to open the eyes of the federal government and in particular the State Department, which in my opinion has acted autonomous to various administrations, be they Republican or Democrat, on this issue of utilizing the economic horsepower that Alaska has to insist, that America has to insist, that we be given fair and open trade opportunities. If we were allowed to compete in rice and in oranges and in beef and in many other subject areas, we wouldn't see the flood of Japanese and Taiwanese and other products coming into America with the tremendous imbalance of trade. This will continue to assist. Alaska is one of the leading examples in the United States on the balance of trade question, both from our timber resources and our fisheries resources. We help to offset that huge flood that comes into San Francisco and other ports. And as a consequence, this is a very fine resolution. I really ask the members to hopefully we can cast a very strong vote today on this subject. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion? Ready for the question? Question for the House is, shall committee substitute for House Joint Resolution Number 27, Resources, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? The clerk lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
37 yeas, no nays.
HJR 27 has passed the House. The clerk read the next item on today's calendar. Mr. Ellis, excuse me.
Could we revert to introduction of guests, please?
Without objection, Mr. Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's my pleasure today to introduce to the body two out-of-town guests. First, I'd like to introduce Mr. Jones Osborne, State Senator from Yuma, Arizona. He serves as the current chair of the Western Interstate Commission on Higher Education. He's accompanied on this trip to Alaska by Mr. Richard Johnson, Executive Director of the Interstate Commission. Both gentlemen are here to speak with legislators about that program and Alaska's participation in that Western State Compact for Higher Education. They're also joined in gallery B with Diane Barron from Post-Secondary Education, who's helped extensively with working out an amendment to legislation that will be before us later today. So I would hope everyone would help me welcome these guests to the gallery.
Mr. Speaker?
Before I forget, the chair wants to give an additional referral of on House Bill 571 to finance, to pick up a fiscal note. Mr. Boyer?
Mr. Speaker, I would move that we take up reconsideration of CS for SB 343 at this time.
SB 343 is before you at this time in third reading.
Mr.
Clerk,
Speaker,
read the bill. Mr. Boyer?
I was going to move that we return to second reading. Do I make that motion before?
Let the clerk read the bill for the third time, please.
Committee substitute for Senate Bill 343, State Affairs, by the State Affairs Committee. An act relating to the Retirement Incentive Program and providing for an effective date.
Mr. Boyer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would move that we return to second reading to reconsider our failure to adopt Amendment Number 1 and ask unanimous consent.
There's objection. Mr. Boyer, you have the floor on the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Briefly, yesterday when we entertained this amendment, I sat back and allowed wide discussion of the bill rather than calling for a point of order on the amendment, and I did that to allow for a broad discussion of the issue. In that whole discussion, though, I think that the issue that I had brought forward in the amendment was clouded with the other issues relative to the bill, and there were a number of members off the floor, in fact, seven members off the floor, and I think I'd like to move back to second reading and hope that the members would let me speak to the merits of the amendment at that time.
Further debate on the question of returning for the purpose of rescinding?
Just a question.
Mr. Taylor, you have the floor.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a question. Could he briefly state what the amendment was that we're supposed
Mr.
to
Mr. Boyer, would you describe the amendment that you intend to rescind action on?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, the amendment simply allowed or would allow that the window of opportunity for municipal employees be extended from March 31st, 1990 to March 31st, 1991, and that the actual date of retirement of those municipal employees be extended from November 1st, 1990, as is in the current bill, to 1991. It's a very simple amendment.
You ready for the question? The question for the House is, shall Senate Bill 343 be returned from third to second reading for the purposes of rescinding our action and failing to adopt Amendment Number 1? Members may proceed to vote. Clerk, lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
32 yeas, 5 nays.
We're in second reading. Mr. Boyer, rescinding motion.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I would move that we rescind our action in failing to adopt Amendment Number 1.
There's objection, Mr. Boyer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yesterday, in failing to adopt Amendment Number 1, I think we did an incredible disservice to local governments, which, as I tried to emphasize yesterday, are under an incredible strain. We tend to feel that there's a lot of pressure off us in this given year because of additional revenues relative to the price of oil, and yet the local governments haven't caught up to us. They're still suffering under has been three very rough years, three years where they've had to ratchet down spending, ratchet down their provision of public services in the various committees and our communities. And I can only speak specifically to my own community, which continues to hemorrhage under lack of funds to provide basic public services. For instance, with regards specifically to police protection in my community, there are only four policemen on duty at any given time in a community of 75,000 to 80,000 people. And Mr. Speaker, I suggest that's woefully inadequate. And what I'm told most recently that we are going to be out of money at in the city of Fairbanks. May 1, we will have absolutely exhausted our overtime ability to keep police protection on or in the community, and then we're going to have to lay off another six people. And what that six policemen and what that will effectively do in my community is cause the ambulances to sit idle. We will have no coverage, and no effort being made to investigate drug and alcohol. Drug trafficking and drug activity in our community. And we'll go from four policemen to two policemen. Now, that's just on the police side of things. On the firefighter side of things, we've lost, and collectively, we've lost 22 policemen and firefighters over the last 18 months. And Mr. Chairman, or Mr. Speaker, I think that the amendment is good. The amendment would provide that an additional five or six members who won't qualify under the window of opportunity in the current RIP program, those people can't qualify. They don't quite reach the age. If we leave the window open for municipal employees, these five or six additional people in my community, and I'm told in kind of a canvas I did of other communities, that there are probably five or six or seven other members in other communities across the state who would also, who are municipal employees, would reach that that age and that threshold, and that you would relieve an incredible amount of pressure on local governments, and you'd be able to allow them to retain long-tenured police and firefighters in our communities. And it's a tool that I think we should make available to municipal governments. They aren't yet out of harm's way. They're suffering in some places more than others, obviously, with reduced budgets and reduced ability to protect the public. And that's what the amendment seeks to do, is provide them the tools and the ability to take care of the public interest.
Further discussion? Mr. Gall?
Well, Mr. Speaker, it troubles me to rise to oppose this amendment again, but I have a great deal of sympathy for the financial problems described by the previous speaker, and I don't want to start bringing up their causes, I don't think that they are going to be helped by this program. They're much larger than that. I don't think the program is cost-effective, and continue to oppose expansion of it. Thank you.
Mr. Davis?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think this amendment, I guess we're still on the rescinding motion, but this amendment just provides an opportunity for communities to participate. It doesn't, it's permissive, and it's up to the community to decide on whether they really want to do this or not. So it's permissive, and it's not mandatory that these communities can use this provision.
Ready for the question, Mr. Schultz? The House will stand at ease. House, please come back to order. Is there further discussion? Mr. Taylor?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. I'm trying to understand the math here. They're fiscally, they have some difficulties, and by opening up this window, they would have apparently the opportunity to retire five police officers that are apparently senior officers. Seem then this would require that someone has to replace those five officers, so they would then replace them hopefully with lower paid people, but they would still have to pay the additional amount for the medical on the five that they have retired, which they're not paying today, but that somehow this is a savings. And I guess the question back to the sponsor of the amendment is, what's the actual dollar savings that they see resulting from having this window of opportunity available to them?
Mr. Boyer, you wish to respond?
Mr. Speaker, I don't have an actual dollar amount. What I know from my in speaking to the city of Fairbanks is that the more senior folks, for instance, in the firemen or firefighter area, some of those top guys are pulling down $115,000, $120,000 with overtime. And what you have is folks who are already online, who are working, who have 9, 10, 11, 12 years of seniority on the department that won't be laid off. So you're not rehiring anybody. You're just allowing that people are bumped off the top and people come up and move up the ranks and fill those positions. They're clearly going to have to continue carrying the health insurance benefits. But the ability to retain more people because of the actual hard dollars saved in salaries is what the community is seeking to do. We're worried that you just don't have the coverage of people. You take five guys off the top and it allows you to keep or you take three guys off the top and you're able to keep five at the bottom or six at the bottom with the hard day-to-day cash flow situation that's improved by letting those guys off the top. And that's what my city's seeking here. And other cities, I only mentioned Fairbanks because it's the city that I'm most familiar with, but I did do a little phone canvas and did speak with the city managers and mayors in a number of other communities on the Kenai and in the Matt Valley and around the state. And others are affected, and others have taken advantage of this opportunity that has existed. And there's a lot of support amongst small communities for this amendment.
Representative Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think the rationale of the amendment is the same as that for the rationale for the entire bill. If you support what the bill does, then you would support what the amendment tries to do, or what will happen with the amendment. And basically, all that the amendment does is that it gives the municipalities the same opportunity that the state has, and that is to sit down and figure out the math. And if it's to their advantage to opt into the program, they'll do it. If it's not, they won't. So this just gives them the opportunity to look at the numbers and exercise the option if it appears that the option is going to be helpful to their community. I think it's a good amendment. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Kopanen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The previous speaker put the case very well. It doesn't mandate that the municipality do this, but it gives the municipality the opportunity to participate and, of course, gives them the right not to allow anyone to retire unless there is an actual provable savings. And rather than reiterate the points made by the previous speaker, I would add one final one, and that is the payment into the public employees' retirement system by the municipality is based on the existing salary of the senior employee. If you raise, give a job to one who doesn't, is not as high on the scale, or hasn't as many years of experience, and therefore all the annual increments, the payment to the public employees' retirement fund also diminishes. So the municipality saves in possibly in three separate ways.
Mr. Larson?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. My arguments would be the same as yesterday. As I interpret this amendment, it's simply to say that if you're not eligible to retire by March 31st, we're going to give you another year. And those who qualify within the additional year then will constitute some savings. Well, is it savings to the municipality or is it an additional cost in the retirement system? I think that's what's before us. So I just wanted to reiterate what I said yesterday.
Ready for the question? Question for the House is, shall the House rescind its action in failing to adopt Amendment Number 1? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Will the clerk lock the roll? Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
24 yeas, 11 nays.
Motion passes. We have rescinded our action in failing to adopt Amendment Number 1. Amendment Number 1 is back in front of you at this time. Mr. Boyer.
Mr. Speaker, I would move for the adoption of Amendment Number 1.
There is objection. Mr. Boyer, I think that, would you wish the floor? Mr. Rieger.
Mr. Speaker, I move amendment to Amendment Number 1. It's on the clerk's desk. I ask unanimous consent.
Has it been distributed, Mr. Rieger?
It's being distributed right now. I just now learned that we're rescinding.
Okay. There is a motion to amend. I'm not sure that... We stand at ease for a moment. Yeah, it is. House, please come back to order.
Mr. Speaker?
Mr. Boyer?
I call the House on the amendment.
Yeah, okay, we'll call the House. I'm going to rule the amendment to the amendment out of order and suggest to the maker that amendment to the amendment that he can offer it as a separate amendment. I suggest that it's not germane to the amendment that's before us, but that the amendment can properly be placed before this body under the existing rules. He could have done it under second reading yesterday, or he could attempt to get back to second reading today and offer the amendment. It would be germane to the bill, but not to the amendment that's being offered. That's the ruling of the chair. Representative Barnes?
Mr. Speaker, could we please return to introduction of guests?
Without objection, Representative Barnes?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, it is indeed a rare occasion when I have the opportunity to introduce a member of my family on this House floor. And I certainly was rather shocked when I just walked through the back door and found my oldest son sitting in the gallery. Would you help me welcome Randall Barnes?
Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Taylor.
Under point of order or parliamentary procedure, Rule 402 Masons provides that to be germane, the amendment is required only to relate to the same subject. It may entirely change the effect of the motion or measure and still.
Mr. Speaker, point of order.
Mr. Grusendorf.
The chair has made a ruling. The minority leader can ask to appeal.
No, I'm asking the chair only to reconsider his ruling in light of the additional reference for Masons that I've just provided to the chair.
Yeah, appreciate that, and I'm not going to change my ruling. It's the amendment's out. The amendment to the amendment's out of order, can be offered under second reading as an amendment on its own, but as an amendment to this amendment, it's out of order. It's not germane to the amendment that's been offered.
Yeah, I understand the ruling of the chair, Mr. Speaker, and I respectfully appeal the ruling of the chair and call the House on that ruling.
call satisfied? Who's not here? Right. Let's stand at ease for a moment while we wait for the missing member.
Municipality. It perpetuates a what essentially is a fraud in how a municipality is forced to calculate the costs and savings when they figure out whether they should or should not grant a bonus 3 years of retirement to an employee. And if the calculation were appropriate, as the amendment which was ruled out of order would have done, I think that then municipalities would be faced with a fair calculation and they could opt to follow the program and do so. But I can't see extending this program in any way, including extending it for a municipality on the terms that the bill is presently using for how costs and savings are calculated. That's why I oppose the amendment and urge the members to vote no.
Further discussion? Ready for the question? Question for the House, shall amendment number one pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Clerk, lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the... Mr. Davidson? Mr. Davidson changes from nay to yea. Any other members? Clerk, take the roll.
25 yeas, 12 nays.
Amendment number one is passed. The bill's back in third reading. Mr. Rieger.
Mr. Speaker, I'm sure not everyone, but people might be wondering if I'm going to try to improve this bill, and I'm not going to. Someone else may, but there are two primary things that I think are wrong with the bill. One I just spoke to under the debate on amendment number one, which has to do with the calculations. Even if that were corrected, there is another that's more broad-based and I think more fundamental problem with this bill. It expands, as we talked about yesterday. It doesn't extend, but it expands what is a poor public policy to include a broader group of people. The policy I'm referring to is to have a retirement system or a part of the state's retirement system which actually encourages the state's most experienced people to leave, not because it's something that's to reduce the trauma of having to lay people off in the alternative, because we aren't laying people off, we're expanding. All it does is churn. I mean, these people who are leaving, who are experienced, are being replaced by people who are new. Now, what kind of employment system is that? Every other employment system in the world, is designed to attract and retain qualified employees. And here we're going the opposite direction, trying to dispose of qualified employees. That just doesn't make sense. We aren't in the position where we're faced with imminent layoffs. I perhaps wish we were, but that's not where we are. If anything, we're making it more difficult and foreclosing our options to offer some kind of a retirement program in the next few years when maybe money is going to be tighter. At that time, we'll have people at a totally different stage of their career who are facing layoffs, because we will have kind of walked through all the people that otherwise maybe could easily move on. So I'd really urge the body to vote no on this, that let's not expand a poor public policy.
Ready for the question? Question before the House is, shall committee substitute for Senate Bill number 343, State Affairs, amended House, pass the House under reconsideration? Members may proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
26 yeas, 11 nays.
Senate Bill 343 is passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll move the effective date clause.
Mr. Martin, on the effective date clause
yes,
motion.
Sir. I realize, sir, it's unusual to talk about the effective date clause, but for those people who really in their heart know that this is a very bad bill for public policy, they should stick to their commitment and not approve the effective date. Thank you.
We stand at ease for a moment. I want to make another appeal to the members of the body here to, when you're discussing a motion, to please speak to the merits of the issue. Please do not in any way arraign other people's motives. The question before the House, shall the effective date clause pass? This vote this requires 27 votes. Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? The clerk locked the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
26 yeas, 11 nays.
Effective date's failed. Brings us back to consideration of today's calendar. Mr. Gavina.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to take up reconsideration of committee substitute for House Bill 493 at this time.
House Bill 493 is before us. Is that in third reading? Bill in third reading, Madam Clerk.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. You want me to read it?
Yes, please.
Committee substitute for House Bill 493, Labor and Commerce, amended by the Labor and Commerce Committee, an act relating to reemployment rights for members of the state's organized militia.
Mr. Gavina.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to move that we go back to second reading for the specific purpose of rescinding our action on accepting amendment number 2 and ask unanimous consent.
Is there objection? There's objection. Mr. Camino, you have the floor.
Mr. Speaker, amendment number 2 that we agreed to unanimously yesterday put a time limit on how long an employer would allow someone to be on a leave of absence, and the maker of the amendment has agreed to withdraw this amendment, I believe, and maybe I'll just allow her to speak to it.
Representative Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I concur that we rescind the amendment.
Speak in favor of the motion. Is objection maintained to returning to second reading? Is there objection? Hearing no objection, the bill's back in second reading. Mr. Cabina.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that we rescind our action of accepting amendment number 2.
Is there objection? Is there objection? Hearing no objection, amendment, the rescinding motion is passed. The motion is back in front of us. Representative Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I understand that the bill is now in third reading.
The bill's in second reading and the amendment is pending, although the sponsor could withdraw the amendment now if that was the person's choice.
I will withdraw the amendment.
Is there objection to withdrawing the amendment? Is there objection? Hearing no objection, the amendment's been withdrawn. We're back in third reading. Is there further discussion?
Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Representative Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I do have some further discussion on the bill. The bill has several serious flaws. One of them is that it does not have any kind of a limit that gives either the employer any reasonable idea as to how long he might be expected to hold the job open. The militia, it does not give the militia member any idea he might reasonably be expected to be away from his job without pay. And there isn't any reasonable limit in the bill to give the militia some guidelines in terms of how long they can expect that a militia member can be on active duty without pay. The reason I withdrew the amendment is because I was unable to come up with a number that I was comfortable, and in looking at the information, the amendment that we adopted set a very, perhaps too narrow a time limit. But it doesn't, but we still have the problem that nobody really knows how long a person can be gone without pay, and there are no constraints to give anybody any guidance. And I think that's a real serious flaw with the bill. Because there is an interest in passing the bill today, I don't really have the time to work or to have drafting come up with some reasonable time limits that give everybody some direction and information and yet don't harm the militia members. So for that reason, I will not offer an amendment trying to set some limit in there. But there are other problems with the bill. For example, the bill does not address that. What the bill does, it reconfirms the fact that when a fellow or a lady signs up for the militia, they may be called to active duty for an unlimited period of time without their usual compensation and with no direction as to how their medical benefits are going to be covered. Is the employer responsible for maintaining medical coverage? The answer is no. Is the state responsible for maintaining or providing medical coverage for the militia person while they are on active duty? The answer is no. So what we are saying is that, yep, we're reconfirming that if you want to sign up, we've got a real good deal for you, you'll be rehired. But we're not going to talk about, and we're not going to address what happens to you or your family if while you are out on active duty without medical coverage, your wife or your child or you develop cancer. We're just not going to worry about it. We're just let that happen, be dealt with some other time. And I think that what we're doing then is pretending that by passing this bill, that we are really doing something to provide an incentive for people to join the militia. But in fact, we are misleading them. We are encouraging them to get into a situation and not providing them any answers to how to deal with those problems if they occur. Yesterday, after session, I spent most of the time speaking with drafting and trying to talk to people whose names I've been given who might be able to give me some ideas on how to address the issue. I spent some time on the phone with the sponsor of the bill. I spent some time this morning with the people from Veterans Affairs. And Mr. Speaker, my concerns are real. There's been at least one suggested amendment, and at this time the sponsor has refused to accept any amendments that would give us an avenue to correcting these flaws. For that reason, I cannot accept this bill, significantly flawed, and in fact, we are presenting additional problems to employers and to militiamen. I will not support this bill, and I urge the members to vote no. Thank you.
Mr. Covina.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I guess the only thing I'd like to say is I'd ask the body's support for this bill. Some of the problems that the previous speaker was speaking about really deal with fiscal matters, and I was reluctant to change the bill and the title of the bill that would include costing the state money, and I would be more than willing to work with anyone in this body to provide medical coverage and insurance coverage for people on active duty for the state militia, but I just did not feel that this was the vehicle that should be used to do so, and I'd just like to urge everyone to vote yes, sir.
Thank you.
prescription and call them.
Mr. Speaker, merely in response, you know, I'm particularly offended by that approach, is that we're saying we're going to give you a problem, we're going to deal with it later. And because we're going to deal with it later, it's really okay. And, Mr. Speaker, later may be too late for the individual who thinks he's doing his state a favor by participating in the militia, allowing himself to be called to active duty, and not having any method to deal with his medical benefit coverage. I think later just may be too late, and another bill just may be too late. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Ready for the question? Question before the House is, shall committee substitute for House Bill Number 493, Labor and Commerce, pass the House on reconsideration? Members may proceed to vote. Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Will the clerk take the roll, please?
29 yeas, 8 nays.
House Bill 493 has passed the House on reconsideration. Mr. Swackhammer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Can we move back to the introduction of the guest?
Without objection, Mr. Swackhammer, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Representative Orr and I are pleased to have constituents from CAP trip in Galerie. They are from Sterling, Nanilchik, Anchor Point, Kenai, and Solotna. Don Marlowe, Jeff Pasco, Dan Presley, Gerald Meade, Randall Burns. Barnes? And Wayne Davidson.
Everybody's smiling. Representative Ulmer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to, at this time, move that we rescind our action in failing to adopt the effective date on Senate Bill 343, and I call the House on the motion.
The motion is in order. There is a call placed on the House. Mr. Gall?
We stand at ease.
Stand at ease. Let's go. House, please come back to order. Representative Ulmer.
Mr. Speaker, I withdraw my motion.
Without objection, the motion's been withdrawn. Clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar. Call is lifted.
House Joint Resolution Number 29 by Davidson, Hoffman, Cotton, Grusendorf, Menard, Navarre, Gall, Foster, McLean, Brown, Larson, Cato, Boyer, M. Davis, Ellis, Ulmer, Copen and Jackal, Sponholz, Boucher, Swackhammer, Furness, Hudson, Sharp, Martin, C. Davis, Hanley, Donnelly, Collins, Wallace, Miller, Barnes, Pettijohn, Zawacki, Lehman, Taylor, Phillips, Rieger, Schultz, and Grunberg, asserting sovereign jurisdiction over the territorial sea out to 12 nautical miles and the air, water, submerged land, and resources found there. The Resources Committee has considered the resolution and recommends it be replaced with the Resources Committee substitute with a new title and due pass, and attaches a zero note and a zero note with analysis, concurring M. Davis, Hudson, Jackal, Sharp, and Menard. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader. Your point of order, Mr. Taylor?
On the bill that's on my desk, there were two names listed as original sponsors that were not read by the clerk. That was Representative Kabina and Finkelstein.
How do you happen to know that?
Pardon? I was watching.
All right. Clerk, please make note of that and make sure the record shows that the proper sponsors are listed. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll move and ask unanimous consent that the Resources Committee substitute for House Joint Resolution 29 be considered in lieu of the original bill.
Is there objection? Is there objection? Hearing no objection, the Resources Committee substitute has been adopted in lieu of the original bill. Does the clerk have amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader. Is there objection to the advancement motion? Is there objection? Hearing no objection, the resolution has been advanced from second to third reading. Would the clerk read the resolution for the third time?
Committee Substitute for House Joint Resolution 29 Resources by the Resources Committee relating to state jurisdiction over the territorial sea out to 12 nautical miles and the air, water, submerged land, and resources found there, and to the transfer of title to submerged land of the territorial sea out to 12 nautical miles to the state of Alaska and the other coastal states.
To debate. Representative Taylor.
If I might have a brief of
these. Standard ease.
They are.
Discussion on HJR 29. Representative Hanley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just wanted to point out a unique feature about this particular piece of legislation. And looking at it, I noted something that's very distinct about this and something that I have not observed in the 6 years that I've been a member of this body, and that's the fact that this particular piece of legislation has 42 co-sponsors. It might be a collector's item.
Mr. Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Joint Resolution 29 before us can best be characterized as a cannon shot for states' rights. It is a musket round in Alaska's efforts to maintain territorial integrity. In the long and tortuous battle to defend Alaskans' access, jurisdiction, and management over the territorial sea, this resolution will help all the United Coastal States fight overambitious federal efforts to control state territory. Our coastal areas, rich in fisheries and abundant in mineral and oil and gas resources, are rightfully part of our great land, Alaska. These treasures should not be bled off, controlled, dominated, or managed by federal bureaucrats at the expense of resident Alaskans. Those factory trawlers vacuuming away Alaska's fisheries with little or no regard for conservation, sustainable yield, or our children's future should be managed by us. Think of the legal dollars saved if litigation were minimized and if Alaska were in charge of its own backyard and all the yards that are part of Alaska's coastal area. Mr. Speaker, since the founding of our great republic, the individual states have controlled their territorial seas out to 3 miles, and some beyond 3 miles. When President Reagan signed Presidential Proclamation 5928 in 1989, extending the U.S. territorial sea from 3 nautical miles to 12, I believe he also handed the state of Alaska control over an additional 53,000 square miles of coastal area. 53,000 miles, Mr. Speaker, 53,000 square miles. Mr. Speaker, that extension will give Alaska control over more than 3 times the ocean area we now manage. Coastal control means our fisheries and other ocean resources will be managed by Alaskans, not federal bureaucrats. House Joint Resolution 29 is a neon reminder to Congress that Alaskans want control over Alaska's full territorial sea. Alaskans have the resources, we have the expertise, and we have the desire and dedication to manage our own coastal waters better than the federal government can manage them. The state of Alaska spends $20 million annually to manage its regional fisheries along our coast. That is more than 10 times the amount the federal government spends to manage fisheries in the vast areas of federal waters off the coast of Alaska. Mr. Speaker, We must make a strong case in Congress that coastal waters belong to the coastal states. Alaska must take the lead among the 23 coastal states simply because we have so much to gain and the most to lose. Our coastal area represents the single richest most productive coastal area in the United States. In Washington, D.C., the Coastal States Organization is working on this very issue on behalf of all coastal states. It may be a slow process, Mr. Speaker, getting Congress to recognize our claim or to act on the territorial sea, but clearly, congressional action will be faster and more certain than the costly, time-consuming litigation. In conclusion, Mr. Speaker, I urge you and my colleagues to act, sign up, enlist, and let us march forward into the thick of battle for states' rights. We must maintain our territorial integrity. Please vote for House Joint Resolution 29. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Foster. I didn't see anything in here about the addressing the beetle, the spruce beetle, and I wanted to ask my colleagues to reconsider their vote this morning and call for a question. Mr. Taylor?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. I recall when we entered into the Sagebrush Rebellion and joined with Western states to talk in terms of the huge federal holdings within our territories, and I think we are better classed as territories than states at times. I was interested when I attended a meeting of the Western States Legislative Group this last fall, that the people from Guam were there. Told me they lived on an island that was 28 miles long, about 8 miles wide, and that the federal government only owned a very small part of their island. And I decided they're probably more of a state than we are here in Alaska, because percentage-wise, the federal government owns a lot more of us than it does of them. But since we had a kind of a nickname for that other rebellion, I'll be anticipating and looking forward to the next resolution to come down, which will be to select the name for this. And I'd just like to suggest that we call it the Geoiduck Revolution here, and that maybe we can encourage other people that have clams and little critters like that to join with us and stand up for state rights. It's probably best to call this a musket shot as opposed to a cannon volley, because that's probably how it'll be understood back there. But I'll join with the former speaker from Kodiak, and he can march together with me on this one.
Mr. Larson?
Yeah, Mr. Speaker, I still assume that we're talking about this resolution that we're all one of the sponsors of. When the speaker of Kodiak spoke, some questions did come to my mind, and I hope I'm still all for this resolution, and I hope we still are. But I guess if we're going to be managing three times as much territorial space as we had before, do we have the money or the ships to do this? And maybe the representative from Kodiak could answer that question for me.
Mr. Davidson, Mr. Prime Sponsor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Indeed, we would have the money, because our revenues would be increased manyfold by the oil and gas leases and the increased fisheries taxes, as well as many other revenues that would accrue to the state of Alaska as a result of the extension of our territorial seas.
Mr. Larson?
Yes, I guess my question still remains. I know public safety has two ships at the present time which are capable of probably patrolling within the 12-mile area, and Alaska has a tremendously long coastline, so I guess my question was, are we going to have to add to the fleet if the federal government and its patrols pull out? Just what is going to be the burden on the state of Alaska if we assume control over this vast area?
Mr. Grusendorf?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the question there, I think it depends on how we look at the vessel replacement fund that we're talking about. There are several things that came out here. One was very pleased that we had 42 sponsors. This is not a unusual thing. It used to be there'd be about five names, and the rest of us would be et al. As to the number of miles here, Mr. Speaker, it's kind of a historical note. Under international law, it used to be 3 miles, and that was established in Europe. It was a very simple thing that at that time, the best improved cannon could shoot exactly 3 miles. And that became the parameters around a lot of those European countries. Since that time, we've advanced considerably, and I don't know how far we get out to 12 miles, but I think we should. I support the resolution.
Representative Collins.
Thank you, Speaker. I don't think it will really add any extra cost if we extend the limit out. The reason for that is that we don't have, that the federal government has jurisdiction over navigable waters. For example, during the oil spill, the federal government was responsible for all of the boats and vessels and everything up to the shore. And OSHA, for example, was responsible for maintaining safety aboard the vessels. Once the shoreline occurred, and at that point, then the state's jurisdiction took over. So I think probably it wouldn't be any increase in cost. Thank you.
Ready for the question? Question for the House is, shall have committee substitute for House Joint Resolution number 29, Resources. Pass the House. Members may proceed to vote. The clerk, please lock the roll. Did any member fail to vote? Does any member wish to change their vote? The clerk, please take the roll.
35 yeas, no nays.
HJR 29 passed the House. I almost got you. The clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar.
House Joint Resolution 73 by Brown and M. Davis relating to air travel between Alaska and the Soviet Union. The House Special Committee on Foreign Trade considered the resolution and recommends it be replaced with a Foreign Trade Committee substitute with the same title and due pass and attaches a zero physical number, concurring Jack O'Ellis, M. Davis, Collins, and Hudson. The Transportation Committee has considered the resolution and recommends it be replaced with a Foreign Trade Committee substitute with the same title and due pass, concurring Grusendorf, Hudson, Lehman, and Foster. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Move and ask unanimous consent that the Foreign Trade Committee substitute for House Joint Resolution 73 be considered in lieu of the original bill.
Is there objection? Is there objection? Hearing no objection, the Foreign Trade Subcommittee or the Foreign Trade Committee's substitute has been adopted in lieu of the original resolution. Does the clerk have amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Move and ask unanimous consent. The Foreign Trade Committee substitute for House Joint Resolution 73 be considered in gross advance third reading placed on final pass.
Is there objection? Is there objection to the advancement motion? Hearing none, the resolution has been advanced from second to third reading. Would the clerk please read the resolution for the third time?
Committee substitute for House Joint Resolution 73, Foreign Trade, by the House Special Committee on Foreign Trade, relating to air travel between Alaska and the Soviet Union.
Is there discussion? Mr. Taylor?
I just had a question to the sponsor. I was noting here in reviewing the legislation that we are encouraging on page 2, lines 4, 5, 6, etc., travel between Anchorage and someplace here, and then Anchorage and another place, and Nome and Kotzebue, but we've not included Fairbanks in it. I know that there's always some debate about whether planes should fly to Anchorage or Fairbanks, and I just kind of wondered why Fairbanks was not on here. Somebody can tell me.
Ready for the question? Question for the House is, shall committee substitute for House Joint Resolution number 73, Foreign Trade, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk, lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
33 yeas, 2 nays.
HJR 73 has passed the House. Mr. Goff?
Notice of reconsideration on the HJR 73, Mr. Speaker.
Notice of reconsideration has been given on HJR 73. Without objection, we return to introduction of guests. I'd like to introduce a person in Gallery B who is a new grandmother, Diana Killian, my mother-in-law. Welcome. The clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar.
House Joint Resolution 93 by the Resources Committee relating to the seizure and forced sale of Alaska Commercial Fisheries Limited Entry Permits by the Internal Revenue Service. The Resources Committee has considered the resolution and recommends it do pass and attaches a zero fiscal note. Concurring, Menard, Davidson, Jackal, Navarre, Furness, Sharp, Hudson, and M. Davis. I have no amendments on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Move and ask unanimous consent that House Joint Resolution 93 be considered gross advance third reading and placed on final test.
Is there objection? Is there objection to the advancement motion? Hearing none, the resolution is in third reading. Would the clerk please read the resolution for the third time?
House Joint Resolution 93 by the Resources Committee relating to the seizure and forced sale of Alaska Commercial Fisheries Limited Entry Permits by the Internal Revenue Service.
Mr. Martin.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to support this bill, but I think it's not as strong as it should be. I do express concern about the state, and I hope the Attorney General's office gets the word. The most important thing about this resolution is to make it clear to the federal government and to the IRS that these fishing entry permits belong to the state, the property of the state, not necessarily of the individual. And this has a direct impact with the people of this state that the resources belong to all of our people. And the permit is just a mean by which we share the resources. And I'm somewhat concerned with IRS grabbing these as personal property of the individuals and selling them whoever may be the highest bidder. So somehow, ever, if we can express ourselves to the Attorney General's office that there's more here at stake than what is normal property of someone's car or someone's boat. It's a fishing permit that allows the citizen of the state of Alaska to share into our resources and should not be sold as average commodities. And I'm going to express that, and hopefully the AG's office would be a little stronger than what this resolution expresses now. Thank you.
Mr. Jackal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to borrow that cannon from the representative from Kodiak and fire it again for this resolution on the state rights issue there. By way of background, on this issue, the Internal Revenue Service, IRS, has seized 8 limited entry permits, Mr. Speaker, and worth more than $1.7 million, and are threatening to auction them off on March 29th at the Egan Convention Center in Anchorage. And 7 of these permits belong to people in my district. And it's very crucial, I think, that we do everything we can within our power to stop this practice of seizing of these permits. The representative that spoke before me alluded to the problem that we have here, and the battle lines have been formed between the state and the federal government. The state views these permits as a privilege, whereas the federal government, the IRS, views them as a property, which means that under our the way we view them, they're not they're exempt from seizure. And in a March 2nd letter, the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission stated that it will not approve any transfer of the permits to the auction's winning bidder. According to Commissioner Twomley, without the transfer papers, the limited entry permits have no value. However, the IRS officials disagree with the state, and they believe that the permit is a property that can be seized when the holder fails to pay his taxes. I think that the IRS's attempt to seize the limited entry permits from the fishermen without first exhausting other alternatives is appalling and unacceptable. When the limited entry statute was enacted, the legislature placed a number of restrictions on the permit holder, which prohibited the forced transfer of permits. And the state has determined that if these permits are auctioned, the successful bidder will have to sue the state to gain possession, since there are no provisions in the statute that allow for the forced transfer permits. So essentially, the bidder would be buying himself a lawsuit. The IRS has less destructive means available to them to collect the financial obligations. I believe that an attempt should be made first to negotiate a payment plan before seizing a person's livelihood and taking away his or her ability to make a living. In many of the cases, the money owed is a mere fraction of the value of the limited entry permit. There are other means of collecting money that is owed. Earnings can be garnished or assets can be attached, and these alternatives will cause less hardship to those who depend on living from the fishery. And it's my understanding, Mr. Speaker, that this may be the tip of the iceberg and that there is a good possibility that more permits may be seized. And for rural residents who do not have expertise in financial matters, who may not understand how to do their taxes and may owe the IRS as a result, I rise in opposition to the attempts of the IRS in pursuing Gestapo tactics and seizing limited entry permits without first trying to work out a payment plan or an alternative with the individual fishermen. I would like to urge other members of the body to vote yes on this legislation because I do believe that essentially what we're doing here is we're saying that these permits are privileges and they're not property. Thank you.
Further discussion, Mr. Gall.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just want to back up the remarks of the previous speaker, indicate that, of course, I support this resolution, and just for a brief moment, call attention to the last remarks that were made, which is that one of the reasons why this problem has been created in the first place is that we have transferable limited entry permits, which can be transferred for a fee. Our courts have found that provides equity in the permit system, but anybody who represents a rural community knows that many of the young people who would like to get into fishing are not businessmen able to handle $150,000, $250,000 loan, and really find that their inability to compete economically in the loan system is keeping them out of the fishery. I just think it's worth mentioning because this kind of problem and many other problems that we have in Alaska could be avoided if we treated our fishing permits the way we treat our driver's licenses, as the previous speaker said, as privileges and not as possessions. I urge support for the amendment, but appreciate the opportunity to bring to the body one of the underlying causes of the problem. Thank you.
Mr. Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to join with the comments of the speaker from Haynes in that these permits have tremendous value, some of them as much as $500,000. And we have known this system to have gone on. This body has assisted that increase in value by providing loans of various types and even a mechanism through which the acquisition of those permits may be financed and funded. We do allow one group, one financial institution, to retake those permits and to take them back, and then they auction them off for market value. And I strongly support the resolutions. I don't want to see the IRS getting into this game. But the former speaker's comments basically are that we have a difficult and complex question out there that needs resolution and it needs some state policy set on it. And I certainly hope we're going to see maybe some further discussion on this, probably not in this session because I think we have too many other large problems facing us, but it's something that this body needs to address in the future. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Question. Are you ready for the question? Question for the House of Shell. House Joint Resolution number 93 passed the House. Members may proceed to vote. House Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
34 yeas, no nays.
HJR 93 has passed the House. Clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar.
Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 19 by Binkley, Kelly, Zemanski, Fisher, Coghill, Eliason, Frank, Jones, Euling, Fakes, Duncan, Porchot, Halford, Rohde, Pierce, Jaroff, and Sturgeluski, relating to alcohol and drug education programs. The Hess Committee has considered the resolution and recommends it be replaced with a Hess Committee substitute, Hess House Committee substitute with the same title and due pass, and attaches a fiscal note. Concurring, Ellis, Grunberg, Gall, Boyer, and Jackal. C. Davis has no recommendation. The Finance Committee has considered the resolution and recommends it do pass and attaches a zero fiscal note. Concurring, Hoffman, Larson, Phillips, Brown, Barnes, Rieger, Kopanen, Wallace, Swackhammer, and Ulmer. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the House Hess Committee substitute for Senate concurrent resolution number 19 be considered in lieu of the original bill.
Mr. Gruenberg?
Do we have a plea for these, please?
Standard ease. House, please come to order. Motion before the House is to adopt the Hess Committee substitute for Senate concurrent resolution number 19. Is there objection? Hearing no objection, the Hess Committee substitute has been adopted in lieu of the original resolution. Does the clerk have amendments?
Amendment number one by C. Davis and Boyer to page 2, line 2. Delete the higher grades of.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move amendment number one.
Is there objection? Is there objection? Hearing no, there is objection? Is there objection? Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The explanation is that is a very simple one. There is considerable evidence that the best target group for this kind of education is actually the smaller children, the kindergarten through age 4. There's a lot of research being done on that right now, and I can't cite any of that, but the fact is that the earlier we give this kind of education to students, the better results we have.
Is there an objection maintained? Is there an objection? Hearing no objection. Amendment number one has been adopted. Does the clerk have an additional amendment?
Amendment number two by C. Davis to page 2, line 4, and it has been placed on each member's desk.
Representative Davis.
Move amendment number two.
Is there objection? Yes. There is objection. Representative Davis, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I am offering this amendment because I'm concerned about the language causing demonstrated harm to the... I don't deny that there are a lot of problems with students, and I think that those we've documented that throughout this resolution. My concern is that causing demonstrated harm to could possibly be construed as having to prove that you have these various problems in your district, and I don't think that that is anything we need to get into. We all know we have surveys, we have all these other things, but they're not necessarily proof that someone would find adequate, and so I would prefer to leave the language just meet the tailored to meet the problems. I'm not reading it right. Most prevalent problems of students of the district, and leave out causing demonstrated harm.
Mr. Gall.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. I oppose the amendment. I support the existing language. I think it's extremely important that when these financial allocation decisions are being made and when program decisions are being made, that the effort be undertaken to determine factually the kinds of damage, the kinds of problems that a community is experiencing. We can easily overgeneralize in this program and not really target the problems that we need to target. It's a way of making things simpler, easing maybe the costs and so on. But we've got some real severe, real specific problems in my district, and I'd like to make sure that the program managers do look to the local people, identify with their help the particular areas that need to be addressed and tailor programs in that way, rather than, for example, just buying into a statewide or generalized type of approach. This was discussed at some length in committee and I think had good support. So I would oppose the amendment.
Further discussion? Ready for the question? Question before the House, shall amendment number two pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Will the clerk lock the roll? Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, take the roll.
14 yeas, 21 nays.
Amendment number two has failed. Does the clerk have additional amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader? Well, the concurrent resolution doesn't need to be advanced. Mr. Taylor?
Yeah, on the resolution, Mr. Speaker, I noted in reading through this that on page 1 there at line 9, the other body that sent this over to us is using the M word, and I just wanted to bring that to people's attention in case anybody wanted to take that out while we're under second reading here.
just overlooked it. Ready for the question? Question for the House is, shall House Committee substitute for Senate concurrent resolution number 19, pass amended House, pass the House, members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? The clerk locked the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
35 yeas, no nays.
SCR 19 passed the House. Mr. Taylor?
Yes. Mr. Speaker, I'd serve notice of reconsideration of resolution number 19 and ask my reconsideration be brought up at this time.
Stand at ease for a moment. House, please come back to order. Mr. Majority Leader?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I guess I just don't see any real pressing need. This is the last body of consideration for the bill, and holding it over for an extra day doesn't hurt anything, and I will oppose the motion. However, I don't intend to reconsider the bill if the minority leader would like to withdraw his reconsideration.
Ready for the question? Question for the House. Shall reconsideration be brought up on the same legislative day? Members may proceed to vote. Any member fail to vote? We'll avoid the roll call. Question before the House is, shall reconsideration be brought up on the same legislative day? Members may proceed to vote. Fail to vote. Clerk, lock the roll.
Yeah, I got it wrong.
What's the problem here?
I typed it in wrong.
Clerk, please void the roll call one more time.
Give me a chance to type.
We're in the middle of a vote, if you please. Are you ready now?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Question before the House, shall reconsideration be brought up on the same legislative day? Members may proceed to vote. Any member fail to vote? Clerk, lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
17 yeas, 20 nays.
Failed. Mr. Majority Leader.
Vote on House Joint Resolution 27.
Notice of reconsideration has been given on HJR 27. Mr. Majority Leader, can we get the citations in the calendar?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There are 9 citations on today's calendar. Honoring Captain Ted Carlson, Anchorage Police Department. Honoring Providence Hospital Newborn Intensive Care Unit. Honoring Kenai Christian Academy High School Boys Basketball.